This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. If you miss part of today's show or want to share it with others, you can by listening to today's show online anytime at wrkf.org or go to the NPR One app or subscribe to Talk Louisiana on Google Podcast. In studio is Fred Dent, the noted financial advisor. Dent Wealth Advisors is his company. And these times are interesting in the economy, but we've been through worse. In fact, we've been through worse when we were doing this show back in the day, if you remember. The Dow Jones Industrial Average cratered to about half its value when President Bush was in charge, the second one. And then in 2020, we had a cataclysmic collapse that ultimately was overcome during the Trump years, and Trump did well with the stock market. It went from about 20,000 to 31,000. His performance was strong, but it was not as strong on a percentage basis. And don't look at overall numbers, look at percentage of numbers. And on a percentage basis, the best presidents in my lifetime, number one, Bill Clinton, number two, Barack Obama. Democrats generally do well with the stock market, and they do better, unlike the protestations from Dick Morris, they do better in reducing the deficit. Clinton actually left the country with a surplus after inheriting a $400 billion record deficit at that time. But that said, we are in the midst of high inflation, the highest we've had since Ronald Reagan was in office in his first term. In fact, he and Biden have a lot of things in common. The economy is not in a recession, according to most advisors, but there is a concern that it will go that way because this inflation ultimately will take its toll. But right now, we as a country increased our jobs by 528,000 last month, and unemployment is lower than it was before the pandemic. And arguments have been going on for months now between economists and politicians about whether the U.S. is in a recession. Fred Dent, are we in a recession or headed toward a recession?
Who knows? As you mentioned a moment ago, that is up to debate. And if this is a recession, it sure doesn't feel like a traditional recession, because in recessions past, we have job losses. People are out of work, they're struggling, they want to work, and their incomes go down. That's not the case now. If you want to work, you can get a job. And the numbers that you're referencing, this low unemployment rate, 3.5%, you said it's the low or pre-pandemic level. It's actually the lowest since, I think, both 1945 and 1969. This is a very, very low unemployment rate. I think really if this is a recession, we can call it a recession light, or as I've heard someone say, a recessionette.
But what happens next? And interest rates have gone through the roof. President Trump, when they were raising it a quarter point, he was calling the Fed, saying they were destroying the economy and killing his election chances. And look at what's going on right now. We've had, two straight three-quarter raises, I believe, within the last few months. Can the economy withstand that?
Probably can. The economy is relatively strong. I think the nature of this so-called recession or whatever we're experiencing right now is that instead of losing jobs, everybody's going to be working, but they're just going to feel a little poorer because their money doesn't go as far in terms of purchasing power because of the effect of inflation.
Well, Fred Dent just noted the employment. It trickled down to 3.5%, equaling the figure in February of 2020. In February of 2020, of course, was the last year that President Trump was in office, and that was a 50-year low. And Trump, when he was running for president, correctly stated that the real unemployment rate is much higher than that because people who are no longer looking for jobs are not considered as part of the unemployment, but are the unemployed. But is it an artificial number or is it real?
I don't know. Let me just say right up front, I am not a trained economist. I'm just a gentleman who has a wealth management firm here in Baton Rouge who takes care of his clients.
I'm glad you said a gentleman, too.
I'll let you be the judge of that. So I don't know. But what seems to be going on right now, Jim, at least from an observer standpoint, is that there are many distortions taking place right now. So it's like walking into a fun house of mirrors. And in one room, you have COVID. We're just coming out of COVID. You have inflation. You have the wars and the escalations with China over Taiwan, the continuing supply chain issues. And so it's hard to make sense. And a lot of people, I think, are confused of where to go and what to do right now. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example of a distortion. Right now, you can invest in a six-month treasury bill, short-term, risk-free if held for 6 months, and get 3% on your money, risk-free. Go to a bank and try to get a six-month CD, they're going to give you probably a 0.5%, maybe less. Why is it that that's the case? That is a distortion mm-hmm. that's taking place right now that's hard to explain.
And so you're saying you can get 3% on your money right now, and I'm sure some people are taking notes. If somebody wants to get a treasury rate, what do they do?
I think, and I may be wrong on this, I didn't check it out before I came on, but I think you can go directly with the United States Treasury and you do Treasury Direct.
Okay. 877-217-5757 is your number. And a listener, this is Hal in Monroe, said, you know, you gave Dick Morris a hard time about being wrong about the deficit and nobody really cares about the deficit. Well, maybe that's the problem, because the U.S. national debt right now is, and you go to this national debt clock, it shows you how the money just goes up, 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 up in a way as we speak, but it's approaching $31 trillion. That's our national debt. And there's some other startling figures on this page. The U.S. population is 333 million. And yet we only have 125 million taxpayers in this country. So people are either not working by choice, not working because they can't find a job, and that's very few, just 3.5%, retired, disabled. But most people in this country are not paying income taxes, and that also includes people at the very highest levels of income, like our former president, who make a lot of money and don't pay any taxes. So we've got a huge issue with not getting enough money in the till. And that's something that is addressed in this plan that passed over the weekend. Actually, it was last night that I think the final...
That was the Senate passing it.
The Senate passing. Now it's got to go through the House, and that's an uncertain process as well. But what will this do for the economy? Some of this is directed at corporations, for example, that historically... at least in recent history, haven't been paying a lot of taxes. There is some climate action that is in the bill as well. It got Joe Manchin on board. It got Kyrsten Sinema on board. Is it going to be a panacea, or is this window dressing, Fred Dent?
Well, let's start with the window dressing. The name of the bill is the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. That's the headline. And the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, released a report saying it would be inflation neutral. So it really has nothing to do with inflation, although it may ostensibly lower medical drug costs for seniors. So that is a form of price control, which has its pluses and its minuses. It lowers the prices, but may come at a cost of decreasing incentives for pharmaceuticals to develop novel medications, because that's something that they have to spend money on. The interesting thing about this, and I read a quote from a famous investor yesterday. He said, when I come back, I want to come back as a carried interest lobbyist. And for those of you who don't know, that is a special thing in the bill that got Sinema to vote yes for the bill. And that has to do with a favoritism towards private equity and hedge funds having to do with the taxes mm-hmm. that they pay.
And the guy who's the head of the National Hedge Fund Association that leans on members of Congress to vote his way is none other than Richard Hugh Baker, the former congressman from Baton Rouge, who represented this city for 22 years. And he is a major player. He's paid very well, over $1 million a year, to represent the hedge fund people. And this bill got no Republican votes, zero. Meaning Kennedy and Cassidy voted no, as did 48 other Republicans. Kamala Harris had to come in and cast the deciding vote, making it 51-50. And you can see how President Biden, he wasn't playing a very good hand when Joe Manchin said, no way, I'm not going for what you want. And his bigger bill, the Build Back America bill, failed because Joe Manchin didn't like it. Joe Manchin liked this enough that he went along with it. And now we'll see what happens in the House, because there are, of course, many liberal Democrats in the House who don't like this bill, don't think it's enough. And what would happen, I can only imagine how what a public relations disaster and probably an electoral disaster this would be for President Biden if this were not to clear the hoops in the House.
Yeah, he may lose momentum. Who knows? We'll know by Friday, most likely.
We will indeed. And on the whole, though, it appears to have been a good week for President Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. And he, of course, is the oldest president in United States history. And if Donald Trump's the nominee in 24, he'll be the oldest challenger of a president in United States history. We'll talk more with Fred Dent of Dent Wealth Advisors after this timeout. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A bit more time with Fred Dent of Dent Wealth Advisors. Fred is a underwriter for WRKF and for this show. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org for emails. The New York Times puts it this way, and I had a listener, this is Holly in the Garden District, asking about the climate part of this measure, which cleared the Senate yesterday, last night. In 1969, President Nixon's advisor, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, wrote a memo describing a startling future, the increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere caused by burning oil, gas, and coal, Moynihan wrote, would endanger heat or dangerously heat the planet, melt the glaciers, and cause the seas to rise. Goodbye, New York, Moynihan wrote. Goodbye, Washington, for that matter. 53 years later, Congress is on the cusp of responding to what Mr. Moynihan termed the carbon dioxide problem. On Sunday, Senate Democrats muscled through a $370 billion bill designed to move the country away from fossil fuels and towards solar, wind, and other renewable energy. If the House passes the legislation later this week, it will be the nation's first major climate law, coming as scientists warn that nations have only a few remaining years to make a deep enough cut in carbon dioxide to avoid planetary catastrophe. Fred, this is another one. I don't think the people on Wall Street really follow climate change and global warming that much, but it's real. It's existential, and it, over time, of course, and maybe a short time, will matter. But at this point, I see the Dow is up slightly on the first day since this happened. Your thoughts about whether this matters for people who are talking with their stock advisors right now?
Well, I think to the contrary, people on Wall Street do pay attention to what's going on with the climate because it is changing. And this affects things like agriculture. And agriculture affects commodity prices. And so you can be sure that there are hedge funds, quant analysts, big Wall Street firms that are behind the scenes adjusting for the changes in the climate. And so people do care. I think what you're talking about is the broad brush opinionated.
You care, but some other people we've had in the studio who are financial advisors probably don't follow this quite closely. That's just my impression, but... but I'm sure there are many who do. And but usually when people are in are investing, it's short-term gratification. It's all about the now, isn't it?
Well, for those who want to react emotionally, let me give you some good news here before we wind up, Jim. Inflation is cooling. The M2 money supply is shrinking somewhat, and that's good for the inflation number. Commodity prices are coming down. Oil is off of its high. Agricultural commodities are down. I even saw an article in this morning's Wall Street Journal that Rolex prices, which have been shooting through the roof, are coming down. Real estate prices
That's
are coming
good
down.
Uh-huh.
So nothing cures price like price. So maybe this inflation is starting to have the intended effect to take a little froth off of the top.
Yeah. If you can buy a Rolex, though.
I'm wearing an iPhone or an Apple Watch. It's more my speed.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me he got his Rolex stolen a few weeks ago, $56,000, and I bit my lip. But who walks around with a $56,000 watch, Fred Dent?
I do not know, but I do know this, is that right now when it comes to investing, people are wondering what to do. And one of my favorite people, John Bogle, said that the stock market is a major distraction from the business of investing. And if you're sitting at home watching the Dow go up and down and just kind of forgetting about what your long-term purpose in owning equities is, then you're going to cause a lot of suffering in your mind.
Bill downtown, let's take some calls for Fred Columbus Dent. Bill downtown.
Hi. State employees a few years ago would get a 4% pay increase on a regular schedule. During the general administration, the legislature changed all that. Now, if you're in the top half of your pay scale, you only get 2%. I've been getting that for 6 or 8 years now. It's killing me with the inflation. How can we plan a career if they change the rules in the middle and, I'm just hurting pretty bad?
All right. Well, inflation is what, 9%?
Right about now,
and
yes.
Most people don't get 9% raises.
Although the Social Security Administration is raising the Social Security payments by a commensurate amount.
By 9%?
I don't know if it's 9%, but with the previous inflation number, I think for the year they are up.
Well, the whole idea is to get inflation down from 9% a year from now, with presumably this budget measure that went into that was passed by the Senate going into effect. If the House passes it, as expected, and many other matters,
it's going to be less about this bill and more about mm-hmm. what the Federal Reserve
All right.
does.
Well, and a listener asked, how much is the war in Ukraine affecting inflation? It's affecting it. You talk about inflation here. What about if you lived in Russia right now, it's a lot more than 9%.
Yeah, well, Ukraine is a major grain exporter, and they're having a hard time getting grain out of the country. They're just starting to trickle it out right now. But food shortages are happening, and that leads to higher prices. And inflation is kind of a worldwide phenomenon right now.
Mm-hmm. Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Hello, Charlotte.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm calling because I hope that people do not forget about the people who get minimum wage, $7.25. They don't get any regular increase in pay.
All right. That's true. And that's a long time ago, well over a decade ago, that went to $7.25. And it's still at $7.25. And yet people like Stephen Wagsbank of the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, he's saying that's a good number. In fact, in some cases, Lawrence Scott would like no minimum wage, zero.
Well, the case I would imagine, I don't want to speak for him, that Lawrence Scott would make is that if we freed or unbuckled from the minimum wage, is that the wage would actually rise because it would have more of a free market effect. And we're already seeing some of that, by the way, because a lot of companies are paying $15 an hour.
Well, yeah, they're having to go above minimum wage. And LABI doesn't have, I would think, any companies in its membership paying minimum wage, but it's just something they don't want to be told what to do. And it's not just a Louisiana phenomenon. It's $7.25 in Georgia as well. And Georgia is considered a much more purple or maybe even slightly blue state than fiery red Louisiana. But it comes down to they just don't want to be told what to do. And I can understand that. But $7.25, $290 a week.
It's hard to. I mean, you almost cannot exist on that.
You can't. That's less than $15,000 a year, isn't it? Yeah.
So here's something to consider. With the labor market as tight as it is right now, maybe it's time, if you're in that kind of job, to look around and see if you can improve your lot, because people are hiring and looking for workers that are competent, reliable, and show up on time. So maybe you can actually command a higher rate in the market.
Patrick in Ennis Wald Estates. Patrick, you're on with Fred Dent.
Hey, I guess my problem is with these climate activists. They constantly attacking the chemical and refinery industry here in the United States, which pay very good. I mean, these are not minimum wage jobs. These pay people very good, people with low skills, maybe high school education only. And meanwhile, we look at communist Cuba's got a tank farm on fire, plumes of smoke going into the atmosphere, not a peep from the climate activists.
Well, there is a peep, but we got to start somewhere, and maybe if we set an example for the rest of the world, they'll take note. But Patrick has a point that we can do all we want in the United States, but if we don't have cooperation with the rest of the world, we're going to have climate issues.
And yet European countries say that we're not doing enough. So it's a constant negotiation
that's
across
true.
Borders.
They are far more ahead of the curve on this than we are. But we're ahead of China.
Yeah.
But China's the biggest country in the world. So there you go. David in Atlanta. David, you're on.
Good morning, gentlemen. I read over the weekend where the Secretary of the Treasury in Louisiana, Schroeder, won't do business with any companies who promote green technology. And Louisiana has more to lose from climate change and sea level rise than any other state in the nation.
All right. I'm not sure about Treasurer Schroeder, but obviously our congressional delegation, which has a voice in this, they're dead set against any kind of adjustments as far as climate action. And the two U.S. senators yesterday voted against this. And you can bet your bottom dollar that every member of Congress other than Troy Carter will vote against this when it goes before the U.S. House from Louisiana, Fred.
Yeah, well, no show would be complete without David from Atlanta.
No, and David knows his stuff.
He sure does. He does his homework.
Atlanta's become the center of the universe. Watch those two races, Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker and Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams. And we'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Fred Dent is in the house for a few more minutes, the financial advisor and proprietor of Dent Wealth Advisors. And if you're watching, and we had a listener ask about the Dow under Biden, and you would think by virtue of his critics that the Dow Jones Industrial Average would be going down. It's actually up 6.5% under his tenure, and his tenure hasn't been that long. We're only talking a year and 6.5 months, but it's up 6.5%, 33,000, and that's a lower rise than the first year and a half of Trump. But as mentioned, Trump didn't do as well as Obama, and Obama didn't do as well as Bill Clinton. But Obama and Clinton are the gold standard in modern time. The Dow Jones Industrial Average went up from 3,200 under Clinton when he took office, and it was well over 10,000 when he left. It tripled. So that's a pretty big return on investment. Fred Dent's all about return on investment. Please be brief in your comments in our remaining time with him. Ray in Prairieville. Ray, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for picking the call. I'm just curious, Mr. Dent, how can we elect legislators who actually believe in science? You know, science, global warming is scientifically accurate. Thing, and yet Louisiana legislators don't believe in it, or they won't act on it.
All right. Well, as mentioned, Fred is a financial advisor, but he also is a smart guy, and he follows the world, and I think he probably follows it a bit closer on these matters than many of his colleagues. But Fred, should people? Howard Cosell used to call sports writers who only wanted to cover the games. He said they had dugout vision. Should financial advisors have more than Wall Street vision?
Yeah, financial advisors need to read widely and ask a lot of questions and be curious about the world, because it's only by doing that that we begin to make new distinctions and think about the things that are going to improve human conditions.
And we've got the satirist Jeremy White on deck, but if somebody were to go into a financial advisor's office like right now, and you know, you got 15 minutes and you start by saying, how about that climate change bill? What about global warming? I have a feeling the conversation would be quite interesting.
Here are the conversations we have. We work with people who have plenty of money. That's not the issue. But they have this nagging concern that something's falling through the cracks. Like, why am I paying so much in taxes? Or if I get hit by a bus, what kind of mess am I leaving behind? And really the main question, I think, that is at the root of most people's wealth concern is, if I have so much money, why don't I feel so free? And those are the kinds of
questions that go beyond the stock market.
And the political realm.
And the great philosopher Chris Christopherson said, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. So there you go. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you'll be our final caller for Fred Dent. Hi, Phil.
Yeah. Hi, Jim. I understand that the main budget for the wars in Iraq were held off the books and like basically bought with the credit card. So like, how much of our debt does China own?
China owns part of our debt, but it's not an overwhelming amount. Last time I checked, it was a few percent. But still, here we are in hostile straits with a country. But the U.S. generally pays its debts. We've never defaulted on a loan as a country, to my knowledge.
Not to my knowledge. So far, so good.
But $31 trillion, that's a lot of money.
There's a story that was also in the Wall Street Journal this morning that legislators are pushing the government or pushing forward on creating a stablecoin U.S. dollar. In other words, a blockchain type U.S. currency that would be part of the U.S. government system. So that'll be interesting to watch.
Well, that'll be a topic perhaps in our next visit with Fred Dent. Well, hopefully we very soon. And for all of us, let's hope the economy is roaring by the time Fred Dent returns and this recession's talk is abated. Thank you, Fred.
Thanks,
always
Ken.
A pleasure. Fred Dent of Dent Wealth Advisors. And in studio is Jeremy White. And he has been with us many times, but it's been a few years. He started Red Stick Magazine, I believe, in 2004.
Yes, 2004. Coincided with the Spanish Town Mardi Gras Parade that year.
Who was the king that year?
That's a good question. My mind was on other things at the time.
Maybe you were the king. I thought maybe that was
No. We just timed it, and then we got an invitation the next year to join a crew.
Yeah, and the queen, by the way. They always have a king and a queen.
Oh, yeah, and the Grand Marshal. I haven't looked to see who that was that year. If I thought about it, I couldn't.
But it started in 2004, and then you segued out of the print. It's hard to believe that's been about a decade.
Yeah, right? 2012, we transitioned over to the digital side, and we were going strong for a good while, and then somewhere along the way, we saw the signs coming. Satire died. Satire was, I don't want to say murdered, but it was killed. So... And this op-ed, the reason why I'm on here, that was basically my attempt to prove myself wrong, I think.
The Advocate bit and printed your letter, and we'll talk about January 6th, which on the surface was not a funny thing, but Jeremy, he gave it his best shot, and he is a funny guy.
Well, it's not a funny topic, like you said. It's satire. Sometimes it's biting without it's got a humor, but it's very, very dark sometimes, and these are dark times. So that's going to color the humor that comes from this era.
But in a politically correct world, which we are in, sometimes people don't.
They don't get
the joke,
which is why I signed off as a satirist.
Which is what you are.
Yes.
But
yes.
It starts this way, and it was printed on July 27th. A tourist event on January 6th, 2021, did not lead to four police officers taking their own lives, nor did legitimate political discourse cause them to die by suicide in the ensuing days and weeks. No, the obvious explanation is that these four men, who just happened to be in uniform on Capitol Hill that day, were tragically destined to end their lives in early 2021.
Right, just like Brian Sicknick was tragically fated to die of natural causes the next day after suffering two strokes at the base of his skull.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's serious business, and it's tragic, but somebody once said comedy is tragedy plus time. Has enough time elapsed?
No, and that's why if we let the time go by, we won't be around to make jokes about it. We may not be allowed to make jokes about it, Jim. And that's why I'm calling it out. We are getting gaslit by people who refuse to admit what happened on my 51st birthday, January 6th, 2021.
So you're born January 6th, 1970.
That was a way to start the second century of my life,
well,
Jim.
Well, it's nice to share the microphone with a fellow Capricorn, January 6th, 1970.
I was gestating when we landed on the moon, allegedly.
You were a Nixon baby. You were born during the
Richard Milhouse Nixon. Don't say that. That sounds disgusting.
Well, he was a good vice president, and I'm proud to say I got right in under the wire with Dwight David Eisenhower.
Oh, there you go.
Who I think was a very good president.
You know, a lot of people sleep on Dwight. They sleep on Ike because it's like, hey, what were the top marginal tax rates during the Eisenhower administration? 90%, I believe.
They were pretty high.
And we built the interstate system. We did all of this infrastructure stuff.
He talked about the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
And those things would be heresy for a Republican now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, Reagan? You think Reagan would have a shot in a Republican primary these days?
He might not.
No way in hell.
Not unless he changed. But as we know, he was flexible. Here's a guy in 1948 backed Harry Truman for president.
Correct.
And, and by 1964, he was backing Barry Goldwater. And Truman and Goldwater were not the same kinds of politicians.
Right, right. But we live in times where satire is, I don't want to say dead, but it's rendered almost useless. So if you look at satire as a, I just want to address this because I haven't been doing satire over the last few years, and people may have noticed and wondered why. I've got other projects that I've been working on, and you're gonna learn about those later on, I'm sure. But satire, over time, I watched it. There were warning signs, and it's a longer conversation than we have time for right now. But basically, if you look at satire as drawing a caricature of reality, and you're pointing out the ridiculousness that might otherwise go unnoticed, what happens when reality becomes a caricature of itself? Imagine you're a caricature artist in the French Quarter, and your job, your whole business model, we have Fred here still, your business model is to draw caricatures of people walking by, tourists usually. And what happens if one day you show up with your easel and your paints, and everybody starts walking by, and they already have the faces that you paint, that you draw? What happens to that business model, Fred? You're done. You're finito. You got to go do something else. That's what's happened to satire. Satire and reality have met in the middle.
Well, we've gotten a few emails, and if you'd like to call, 877-217-5757 for Jeremy White. And emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. And one listener, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, asking, now, he may remember incorrectly, but I do remember a story about him. Was Bob Dean ever on the cover of the Red Stick magazine?
Oh, I know we did a lot of stuff about Bob Dean. I don't know if we ever put him on the cover, though, because, no, I'm drawing a blank on that.
I remember
one.
He called his empire Deanopolis. Remember that?
Yeah, Deanopolis.
And he got arrested for drunk driving.
Right.
And he allegedly poked a cop in the eye. Something like that. And you said it should be Felonopolis. I remember that. No, that's
probably, that sounds like something Bob, I would have said.
Bob probably didn't think it was funny, but I thought that was funny. I chuckled at that.
Yeah. But it's, man, that whole thing during Ida with, you know, Schadenfreude, I don't like to indulge in Schadenfreude too much because it's karmic suicide, but every now and then just a little taste.
And another
so
listener notes that you were really hard on one Judge Don Johnson.
Yeah, again, one of the things I close with in this op-ed piece is about the theater of hypocrisy that we find ourselves in, and that's just one example. Right there, the hypocrisy of a judge, somebody who runs a DWI court who's got two and then somehow magically erased them.
877-217-5757. We'll start with Luke in Spanish Town when we return with Jeremy White. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Jeremy White, the satirist, is in town, and he is in our studio. He did Red Stick magazine for many years, and for 8 years, it was a weekly production, and there were hits and misses, just like there are with this show, but a lot of it was really funny stuff, and I miss it. Luke in Spanish Town. Luke, you're on with Jeremy. Good morning.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Jeremy. Thank you for taking my call. Jeremy, I was curious about what you think the role of humor plays in holding truth to power.
It's a very important role. It's a very important role. And, you know, it gets hard because, one, people are distracted. Life is really busy and hectic and crazy. And so they may not, you know, be interested in anything like that. They're tied up in their lives. And, you know, Fred and I were just talking off air as he was leaving. It's a hard thing to do right now because, again, where is the wiggle room to find the humor? And that's where the sharp or the best of the best are really going to rise to the top because you have such limited wiggle room to make jokes. One, because it's a very serious time. There's existential angst. So You know, you've got to be careful with where you go. So, and we're getting gaslit on a daily basis by a certain party. So you've got to know your craft. You've got to be smart about it. And this is where the artisans, to use a word that's popular now, this is where the artisans are really going to shine. This is why I hate to say it. But they say, you know, dark days are where the great art is made, because that's your that's where you're tested the most. You have a lot of opportunity to delve into the depth of humanities and that kind, all that good stuff. But really, it's a challenging time to do it. And so, if you're up to the challenge, this is where you can make your mark.
877-217-5757 for Jeremy White on Talk Louisiana. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on.
Good morning. I really enjoyed your red shtick, and I differ with you. I don't think satire is dead, but I enjoy stereotypical jokes, Andrew Dice Clay, Chappelle, all of it.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Hopefully, hopefully I've grown a little bit past Andrew Dice Clay, but...
what about Chris Rock?
Chris Rock is fine. I like Chris Rock. You know, I'm fine with folks who don't get so hamstrung by their persona, which is tied to a certain era. It's like times change. Mm-hmm. Some of the great comedians kind of evolved. I don't want to say changed. And like, you look at Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was not the same person. By the time he left the stage, he was not the same person who entered the stage. And so you can make arguments about that.
He got rich, and a listener beat me to the punch already. You mentioned Richard Pryor in the first thing in Baton Rouge that many think of as the toy.
The toy, right.
Think of that concept. Do you think some Hollywood producer today would accept a script where a black man is bought as a toy?
No. And you know what else wouldn't work today is a sitcom where the punchline is literally a punchline, where the husband threatens to send his wife to the moon with a punch. That wouldn't work.
Jackie Gleason.
Exactly.
Right?
That, you know, that wouldn't work nowadays.
No,
on the air.
Times change. Maybe, well, certainly in the Richard Pryor case, the toy, that's one that Hollywood never should have made. And it is obscene to think that mm-hmm. that was 40 years ago.
Right. And
I don't think there'll be any 40 year anniversaries of
the
toy.
And I always hear people talk about, because we did have a cover using Blazing Saddles, mm-hmm. and it was a playoff of Blazing Saddles, and a lot of people like to use that as mm-hmm. the, oh, we'll never have that again. And maybe we don't need another Blazing Saddles. There's a thing. Before you remake something, is it needed? Mm-hmm. Or are you just stroking your ego or patting your pocket or both? Artistically, culturally, does it need to be remade? If the answer is no, leave it the hell alone.
Well, the common thread of the two examples we just gave about how comedy has changed, the toy and the Honeymooners, is one Jackie Gleason, who died 35 years ago this summer.
I grew up on the Jackie Gleason show.
Jackie was actually a funny guy.
He was. My introduction to him came in the Smokey and the Bandit movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember he was interviewed in 60 Minutes, and he said, you know, they called me the great one. And I never complained. It was Lucille Ball who gave him that name.
Oh, wow. Didn't realize that.
Yeah. Pretty and it cool. was a play on Broadway. Wildcat.
Really?
Lucille Ball, the song. Hey, Look Me Over became Hey, Fighting Tigers.
Oh, that's I knew song. It came from a movie. A musical.
Yeah. Now, Louis Unglesby, the famed attorney, has been with us a few times. And he says in Louisiana, he's got a point, where have all the characters gone? There are no characters left. It's not fun anymore.
Some of them have died.
But they haven't been replenished.
No.
But how can you replenish Edwin Edwards?
Exactly. That's one where we are, I don't want to say spoiled because, I don't want to say spoiled, but we get used to it. We get mm-hmm. so used to it and we feel like we are entitled to this entertainment in our politics.
Well, today in the New York Times, Michelle Cottle, who's on their editorial board, writes an editorial about the Wisconsin senator, who some believe is out of his tree, Ron Johnson.
Mm.
She writes, the Trump era has given us so many, let's say, colorful characters. And Trump is one of those characters, and I know many of our listeners loathe him, and there's, in many cases, not much to like about him, but he is a true character, and I thought Alec Baldwin's portrayal of him was brilliant. Then Alec ran into some problems.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nobody is perfect, and celebrity culture's got its trapdoors there. But colorful characters. You know, it's hard to be colorful, though, when your entire political base is surrounding it's all hinged on a black hole, just sucking everything down.
I've noted this, that Trump, who lives in lavish surroundings, the most lavish imaginable in our country, would not associate with these people at his rallies. He wouldn't want to see them in the lobby of Trump Tower.
No.
James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on. Good morning.
Hi, Jim. Good morning to you and your guest. I saw a Washington Post article over the weekend. This Arizona group, radical right-wing MAGA Nation types. Anyway, one of the officials in that Republican Party out there had said that the 2020 election was stolen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of them say that. And that the devil was the one who stole it. So not only is the devil the Antichrist, the devil is also the anti-MAGA Nation.
All right.
That's a plus for the devil.
The devil's been out there for a while. Who was the comic who said the devil made me do it?
Ooh. It was somebody in the Republican infrastructure.
I think it was Red Fox.
It was Red Fox. Flip Wilson.
Now we have Fox, and Fox is a red network, so we have a new Red Fox.
There you go, Red Fox. Very Red Fox.
Chris in Goodwood. Chris, good morning.
Yeah, Jeremy's right. It was Flip Wilson who said the devil made me do it with his Geraldine character.
There you go.
So
we used to have real characters like Edwin Edwards and 60 Rayburn and others, and now we've got faux characters like John Neely Kennedy, who was trying so hard.
So hard. He tries so hard.
And then we've got the real ones like Clay Higgins, who really is himself.
Yeah, you've come across
Clay Higgins is a character. John Kennedy is not, but Clay Higgins is.
You've got this is representative of a larger differential in the Republican Party. You have people who know better, like John Neely Kennedy, like Ted Cruz. These are smart people. They went to higher learning. They went and they know what they are doing is exploitation, and they're doing it anyway. Then you have people like Clay Higgins and Louie Gohmert and Marjorie Taylor Greene and those ilk, and they are completely bought in. They don't know any better. They are just completely bought in to MAGA.
Well, what would you rather have, sincerity or intelligence?
I almost have more sympathy for the ones who are completely deluded. The ones like John Neely Kennedy and Ted Cruz, who know better but are doing it anyway and are fully aware of the implications of their actions, those are the ones who I really want to start an app for the future that'll let people geocache their grave so they can go and do things.
I think it's over $30 million now that John Kennedy has raised for his reelection quest.
Whoop-dee-doo for him. He lives in a state where he can get by with this. I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. I went to Vanderbilt to learn to speak dumbly.
He also went to Louisiana Tech. He doesn't mention for 2 years. He doesn't mention that very often.
No, he doesn't.
And he has an LSU helmet on his desk. He didn't go to LSU.
He didn't go to LSU.
His brother George did. George is an LSU graduate.
I was wanting to look this up the other day, but you probably know it, Jim. When did John Neely Kennedy go from being a Democrat to a Republican? What year? It was in the 2000s.
Well, it was after he lost to David Vitter in 2004, so around 2005.
Around 2005.
Yeah.
That was when he decided to become a Republican.
And he was 54 years old at the time.
54. I still have a couple of years to go.
And then you could have an epiphany. And Jeremy, you might get rich. I do like your shirt.
Thank you.
What does it say?
I make poor decisions. It's actually my...
And it's P-O-U-R decisions.
Yeah, P-O-U-R. It's a bottle of wine. Okay. It's from my brother-in-law in the Pacific Northwest. He's a winery guy.
Well, I was going to talk a lot about Buddy Leach today, but God rest his soul. He died at 88 years old.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, Claude Buddy Leach, former congressman, former state lawmaker.
Oh, I think he came to one of our comedy shows downtown.
He was a guy who had a sense of humor, and we'll miss him. Thank you.
Yeah.
And he was on the show a few times. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jim.
Talk Louisiana, signature support from First Financial and from Jerry Lane.